First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to a Columbus Day edition of the BS Report. After watching the Red Sox advance to the second round as the Yankees fight for their pathetic little lives, I had to grab a celebrity Sox fan. So let's get right to today's guest. He's one of the head writers of Saturday Night Live as well as the co-host of Weekend Update. Seth Meyers, welcome to the show.
How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm feeling really, really good. I want the Indians to and the Yankees to fight to the death these last two games.
Yeah, you realize the value of maybe Carmona having to pitch again.
Yeah, well... Now. Carmona and Sabathia as the combo.
Yeah, although then, I can't believe the Indians are going to maybe pitch Bird tonight. That seems crazy.
Well, and then the other thing I loved was Joe Torre using Jabba Chamberlain for two innings last night. He's clearly gone senile.
Yeah. Although you would, I mean, it's really hard to imagine working for a boss who the day of the game says, you know, we're probably going to fire this guy if he loses.
Yeah, I feel like the Steinbrenner family does this to pretend that Steinbrenner is still, like, functional. Incompetent.
Yeah.
In fact, he's probably in some hospital bed in like the basement of some mansion.
No, he's had a tough year. You really hear it because he hasn't said much. So I really do feel like people are questioning his competence this year. And
yeah,
he had to get one out before the season was over.
Yeah, I feel like the family all banded together and said, "Let's make up a quote from Dad."
Yeah.
Let's clear this up for all the doubters. You grew up in New Hampshire.
I did. I grew up in New Hampshire, Bedford, New Hampshire.
And you're a real Sox fan.
Sox fan.
You're not one of the fakers like Dan Cook.
No. I'm the real deal. I'm the real deal. Yeah, there's. It's funny. You see a lot of guys in Hollywood with Red Sox hats, and they sort of can't get past the first three questions.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, and the other thing is, those people, quadrupled or quintupled after 2004.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is disturbing. A shame because it was only 2004 was only worth it if you were a fan beforehand.
Right.
You know, to jump on after 2004 is the worst bandwagoning of all time.
Yeah. I hate it.
Yeah, it's rough.
And the country turned against us, which was the other thing. Everybody now it's like the Cubs are the lovable losers, and
yeah.
With the Red Sox, it's like you guys are annoying. You're all about you.
Yeah,
and it's just not as much fun.
Well, you do remember too. I mean, with all as much as I love and respect New England fans, like we are pretty annoying.
Yeah,
and I was in San Diego this year for that Padres series, and it really was a 50-50 split in the fans. I also love that, like, you know, right away they start chanting, "Let's go Red Sox." And you realize Padres fans who have never chanted, "Let's go Padres" before in their lives, there's like two pitches where they realize if they don't start, it's going to be the whole game.
Right.
But it's good. I think we bring out the best of other fans, but they correctly hate us by the time the games are over.
Yeah. And, you know, going on the road and overtaking all these stadiums hasn't really helped the cause because each American League city now resents us.
Yeah.
And it's going to eventually sweep the country. But you guys started the 33rd SNL season two weekends ago.
We did.
And we're in the heart of the baseball playoffs. Sox are looking great. Yanks are in the last legs. How hard is it to balance putting together the show when so many good things are happening in the playoffs?
It's rough because, you know, we had a show week last week. And so I watched all of the first game. But, like, Friday night, you know, I really only kind of was able to tune in for extra innings.
Right.
I will say, and I think you've called this out, and I don't quite know where it is, I could not have been worried less about Anaheim.
I'm with you.
And it's so strange because everybody in New York was afraid the Yankees were going to play them. And so
yeah.
That weird thing that they're like just a cursed team for the Yankees, and you just were like, oh, yeah, all right. Angels, great.
Yeah, it was a little rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, very much so. I don't know what the equivalent is in other sports, but there's just that team that, like, whatever reason the Yankees are afraid of them. And it's that thing, too, where people go like, oh, the Angels own the Yankees. See, it's a completely different team, especially now in baseball. Like, in 2 years, everything's different.
Right.
And so you're like, well, yeah, I understand that you lost to them the last time you played them, but you'd be way better playing them right now than the Angels.
Well, I was like maybe like 3% worried about Anaheim. And then the series started, and Vlad couldn't walk. Garrett Anderson comes up. He's looking out of one eye.
Yeah.
Mazur Astoris is batting fifth. Like, I was like, oh, my God. This is going to be a sweep. And then by yesterday, I went over to a friend's house who had the five TVs, and we had the Red Sox game on one of the smaller TVs. I was fine with it.
Yeah.
I wasn't concerned.
It was so. It's been nice. I mean, like, I also realized that, like, this is why I mean, I think we're on the same page. I cannot handle another Yankees Red Sox series.
Yeah.
Because the volume of the playoffs right now is just right for me. It's like an incredibly comfortable seven. And, you know, and it'll just go up as we get further in the playoffs. But, like, even this, I was less stressed about the first round of the playoffs than I was about the last time we played the Yankees in the regular season when both teams were definitely going to the playoffs.
Well, I think we all know, despite Cleveland jumping out to that 2-0 lead, I just feel like this Red Sox-Yankees thing is destined to happen. I don't know why. And Cleveland hasn't even had Joe Borowski blow a game yet. But you guys will actually – you have another show this week, and then you have an off week the week after, right?
Yeah.
So it would work out good for you. Well, it would work out good with Sox-Yankees potentially.
Yeah. Although I have to say, I was there in 2003. I was at Yankee Stadium when Boone hit the home run.
Oh, no.
One of the worst things ever. And then I went to game one the next year when they killed us. And then I went to game three at Fenway when they won like 19-8. And I swore I'd never go back to Yankee Stadium for a playoff game again. I just can't do it.
And then you guys, I haven't gone back there in 4 years. I just feel like I can't explain it, but I've had so many bad memories there that I now don't enjoy going.
Yeah, I had a chance to go when we clinched in 2004. We won Game 7, which obviously would have been amazing. But I was just like, I don't think I would have been happier if I was there.
Right.
Like, I was as happy as I've ever been ever.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine, like, being a Yankee. Like, because Yankee Stadium is just, like, then it was just until I had to get home.
I think the other thing about going to that game was, even though the Red Sox won it pretty handily, there was that moment when Pedro came in.
Right.
Still never explained why that happened. But the Yankee fans are chanting, "Who's your daddy?" And I honestly think I would have lost control of my bowels if I had been in the stadium.
Exactly. It is really hard to explain that thing of, like, because Lorne is very nice and always offers me tickets. And you can't figure out why I don't want to go.
Right.
And you just want to explain, like, there's just no joy in it at all. You know, like, you've got to be somewhere where you can be ridiculous and curl up into a ball when you have to.
Yeah, that's funny, because in the 2004 playoffs, I had a chance to go to Game 6 and Game 7, and I just stayed in Boston. I was almost like I was too afraid to leave the friendly confines of the Massachusetts area.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just didn't want any part of it.
Are there
other sports fans who work for the show?
I think, like, I'm probably the biggest sports fan. Will Forte is a really big Bay Area fan.
Really?
He's from there. He's a huge UCLA fan.
That's interesting, because I would have – he's someone I would have pictured as, like, never seen a game before.
Yeah, no, I was surprised as well, but he's a really big sports fan. Hmm. And then we have, like, plenty of writers. We also have, like, a lot of guys, a lot of Boston writers, because they went to Harvard. So there's a nice Red Sox support here.
Now, do you – like, what's the level? Is there, like, one writer who, like, pitches a lot of sports stuff? Because I probably would have been that writer.
Yeah, there is there are guys – it's weird because, like, you know, with sports stuff, you know, when people pitch stuff that as a sports fan you really like, it's really tough in the room on Wednesday at read-through because there's so many people there who don't follow sports.
Right.
So I think that it's really hard to get a sports piece on because the first line of defense is really not a big sports group.
Hmm.
And in a weird thing, that's why scenes about showbiz do great on Wednesday.
It's kind of the same reason why HBO keeps putting out shows about Hollywood and celebrities.
Right.
Because the people pitching them those shows, it's right in their wheelhouse.
Absolutely, and they love it. And they see how good the details are.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when you do a sports scene, it just sounds like sports to people who don't watch sports.
Yeah.
It happens like 10 times a year, somebody writes a really good scene about, like, an agent. And I believe America actually thinks showbiz is super stupid.
Yeah.
Like, because even, like, you know, they just, like, they think everything in showbiz is great, and they, like the TV shows it puts out and the movies it puts out, and they don't really like seeing how, like, ugly it is.
Right.
And so, but again, like, if you're surrounded by showbiz people, you're like, oh, my God, that's great, that's so accurate, and then you bring it out on Saturday, and it often plays to dead silence.
I wanted to talk about the process of putting together the show, because I'm just completely fascinated by it. Other than the fact that everything is done probably with computers and emails now, it really hasn't changed since 1975. Like, the offices are the same. The weekly schedule is the same. Everybody keeps the same ridiculously late hours.
Yeah.
Why hasn't this changed in 33 years?
I don't really – there's a really nice purity to the fact that it's like this. And
right.
I don't really know what, having worked here now for 6 years, what I would change, certainly about the process. You know, the main thing is, like, putting stuff on cue cards is, like, you couldn't use prompter because this stuff changes too fast.
Yeah.
You couldn't trust it. So, you actually, it's a weird show where you actually need to trust people rather than machines. It's one of the few places left where that holds true.
Yeah, but when they were doing the shows in the mid-70s, part of the reason they kept the late hours was because everybody was doing drugs, and that was kind of the scene back then.
Right.
What is the purpose of staying up till 3 in the morning right now?
I do still believe that, like, comedy writers at their heart of hearts are procrastinators.
It's a very good point.
Most people here, like, don't have anything to get home to.
Interesting.
And I also think that, like, you know, especially sketch comedy writing, the other thing about our show is, like, it's completely, you know, there's no through line to our show. At different, you know, you see 8 sketches in a night. They're all written by different people.
Yeah.
And so you don't, you can't have, like, a meeting in the beginning of the thing and be like, all right, so here's what we're going to do this week. And so people have to sort of find their inspiration at their own times and stuff like that. And obviously the later the night gets, the more you let down your, you sort of let down your governors of, like, that's not funny or this isn't funny.
Yeah.
And you just sort of start writing because you have to, and a lot of the best stuff comes out of that.
I couldn't agree more. And that, now, actually, you've just clarified everything for me, because I feel like, I don't want to say I'm funniest at night, but that I think of the weirdest stuff at night. Like, you take more
right.
chances because you're half awake, and maybe at 1:30 in the morning, that's when you might see some joke that you didn't see when you were completely awake at 4:30 in the afternoon.
Exactly.
So maybe that makes sense.
It does. It really does. And especially, the funny thing is, like, you know, we don't know that many hosts in advance, but you'll get one and you'll think of, like, 8 ideas that are perfect for that host.
Yeah.
And then 3 weeks later, that host will show up and you'll look at the list and you're like, what was I thinking? Like, all of these are terrible. And then you'll have, like, a crazy idea. Like, at 8 in the morning, you'll be like, oh, that's what you do for this host.
Right.
Also, at that point, you've, like, met them and you've, like, seen their personality. You've talked to them. And, you know, that it's funny how much that helps with when you have to write a sketch for a famous person.
How much coffee is consumed during the average week?
Crazy amounts of coffee.
They could open a Starbucks on the floor there.
Yeah, because I'll tell you this. This is the amazing thing about SNL. There's not a coffee machine up here. Like, there's one dude with an espresso machine. So you can always go into his office. But that's not really the same. So you constantly have to send interns out to go to Starbucks.
Why couldn't they, like, as a 33rd anniversary gift, like, just open, like how they have in the airports, like those little tiny
right.
Starbucks?
Exactly.
Just have one barista.
It would be perfect.
Actually, Dunkin' Donuts would be better because you're back east.
Yeah, Dunkin' Donuts would be better.
all the sketch ideas get pitched on Monday.
Yes.
And until you've been there, and I was there briefly when I was working for Jimmy's show, it's impossible to realize how nerve-wracking it is to pitch ideas to a group of comedy writers who really won't laugh out loud at anything unless it's extremely funny or extremely obscene and there's no third option. So my question is, why hasn't this ever been captured in a documentary or anything?
It was weird. Like, I think they did what was it? The biography, Annie Biography did one, like, 6 years ago on the show.
I didn't know that.
Have you seen that one?
No.
It's pretty good. It's 2 hours, and it's really good, and it has a little, I think it's from a, I can't remember who the host was, but they show pics, Gwyneth Paltrow. They show some of Pitch, and you get a sense of how brutal it is.
Yeah, see, I feel like I would pay as much as I pay for NFL Sunday Ticket to watch the pitches on Mondays.
Yeah, it is. The funny thing about pitches, a good sketch idea usually pitches badly, whereas a terrible sketch idea sometimes will pitch well. You know, like those, like, usually one of those SNL scenes that just has one joke.
Yeah.
That got a huge laugh at Pitch. You know, because the one joke is actually funny. It's just you didn't want to see it a bunch of times for 5 minutes.
Now, are there times where I know Lauren has the final cut, right?
Right.
So are there times where there's just a sketch that everybody loves, but for some reason it rubbed him the wrong way, and he just cuts it, and everybody's like, oh, my God, how did that get cut?
You know, there are certainly occasions of that, but I have to say at the end of the day, it's pretty much a meritocracy with the sketches. Like, the best stuff does make it, because, you know, you have a lot of levels. You know, we all read it on Wednesday in front of everybody, and, you know, the stuff, and that's when we cut from, like, 40 down to, say, 12.
Yeah.
So now you got 12 things, and we do it in front of a live audience at 8, you know, the dress audience. And, you know, they're obviously a different 300 people than the 300 who are going to see it an hour later. But, you know, they're not usually totally wrong. you know, and then the problem with the show, you know, there's that, you know, we've talked about like the 5-to-1 scene.
Yeah.
Which you can sort of get away with being a bit more of a trifle that has like a bit of weirdness to it. The problem is you can't do 10 5-to-1 scenes.
Yeah.
You know, so you have that one slot and, so more often than not, you know, I've certainly had stuff. I remember like my 5th show at SNL, I got a piece cut that I thought should have been on and I went back in my dressing room and like kicked a trash can. And I remember thinking like, so that's all it took? 5
right.
shows on the show you always dreamed you'd be on and now you're angry?
Well, I remember, I think my favorite, was it 10-to-1 or 5-to-1?
Well, 10-to-1 is probably
10-to-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, 10-to-1 for people who don't know. And in fact, I didn't know until recently. 10-to-1 is basically the last sketch on the show.
Yeah.
And that's the sketch where you're maybe most prone to take chances because at that point everybody's either asleep or they're having sex with whoever they're lying in bed with.
Right, or they're the kind of fans that wait up till to see these kinds of sketches.
Right. So yeah. In my opinion, the greatest one ever was the first Barry Gibb show.
Yeah.
Which just came out of nowhere and was so ridiculous. And I just remember like being half asleep and being so delighted and so happy and not even knowing what to do with myself after it was over. But I guess those hit everybody a different way. That one just hit me the right way.
There was a couple of main things about that. One is Fallon, sort of that came from Jimmy's mind, and he was the one who said Timberlake looked like Robin Gibb. Like,
right.
He was like, so I want to do an idea with that.
Yeah.
And also, if I should send you the dress of that from that night, because the dress was a train wreck.
Really?
Like, really bad. There were problems with cards. Like, they had to stop halfway through it, which rarely happens.
Yeah.
And so it went into, like, it did not have, like, a lot of full, it didn't have the full confidence of everybody going to air. And then it was just one of the joys of the show since I've been here. In my time there, that is one of the most wonderful things I've ever seen.
And the other thing that, well, there's a lot of interesting things about the show, but you just never know with the hosts.
Right.
You don't know until they show up. And somebody like Timberlake, who I never, ever would have guessed would have been a great host, is really like one of the best 5 or 6 hosts you guys have had this decade. Like, he can do anything.
Yeah, no, he's going to be like a Baldwin for us. I think we'll have him every year until he doesn't want to do it anymore.
So who are the staples? Baldwin?
Baldwin,
Timberlake.
We haven't had Walken for a few years, which is always disappointing. Timberlake. Hanks came back after a long break last year, and I think he's going to come back again this year.
He's probably it's either him or Baldwin as the greatest host ever.
Yeah, because Walken has a thing where he's just like, he's always Walken.
Yeah.
But those other two guys, like, when you look back at some of the stuff they did, especially, like, there's nothing greater. I can't imagine the feeling of not being a SNL cast member but having recurring characters.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be a certain level of performer to pull that off.
Yeah, and Hanks had, especially in the late 80s, I think he had like 3 or 4 recurring characters.
Yeah, short-term memory. He had those guys with Lovitz. I don't even know what their name was. But
I like those guys.
They were one of my favorites.
I also thought Gwyneth Paltrow, although she doesn't do this show anymore, I thought she was really good.
Yeah, she was great. I ran into her recently hopefully she'll come back now because she, you know, was having kids and stuff. But
yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal was surprisingly good.
I was saying the other day, though, like, if I had like insider information on the stock market, like I have insider information on the show, I would still lose all my money. Because even on Wednesday, Thursday, if I could bet on whether the show would be good or bad, I would be wrong more than I'm right. Like, it's amazing how it all comes together on Saturday. And it's either like, you'll be like, oh, I really thought we had a good one. And then it all fell apart. Or like, you just have a host that rises to the occasion.
It seems like the guys who and the girls who struggle the most are the really good actors who are used to like memorizing lots of dialogue. Like somebody like De Niro is just basically reading the cue cards the whole time.
Yeah.
But the people, for whatever reason, somebody like Baldwin just has the natural gift for it.
Yeah, he really does. I will say about De Niro, the read throughs, because he's done it twice since I've been here.
Yeah.
And I would say your assessment on him is pretty accurate. But the read throughs with Robert De Niro have been like some of the greatest hours of my life.
Really?
Because he really loves it. And he so when he's reading sketches that he hasn't read before, you know, at the read, like, he laughs really hard. And Robert De Niro is one of those guys who laughs exactly like Robert De Niro. And it just is so, like, watching Robert De Niro, like, wipe his eyes is just like, you can't be happier. If you wrote a word that makes him do that, you're like, well, that's it. That's all I needed this year.
Has there ever been somebody who was too famous? Like, just people couldn't act naturally around them?
You know, like, like, people like Britney are weird.
Yeah.
Like,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. And this is years earlier, you know, but like, they're just like sort of, it's like just when people are super iconic like that.
Yeah.
You don't really know you know, quite what to do. I will say, my fourth show as well, like when you have like a host come and sit in your room and you're talking about comedy with them, there are certain people where you're like, I'm not getting anything about this. I'm way too nervous. I'm talking to a huge celebrity about like some stupid idea. Yeah. And I'd way rather just write it and see if it works.
Who's been the random question? Who's been the best looking female that you've had in the show?
Well, this is a cheat. Is the best looking woman I ever saw at the show was when Billy Bob Thornton hosted, Angelina Jolie was here. And so she walked by me once. And that is the time in my life where I most thought my head would like rip off its torso, like turning to watch her go by. Like she was remarkably beautiful in person.
That's what I loved about Jimmy's show, is the celebrities that we had on, they never looked like they did on TV or the movies. It was always either much better or much worse.
But right.
They never looked the same for some reason. It was always one or the other. It was one extreme. And usually it was actually worse. But then you'd have the rare ones like Jessica Alba, where it was like she actually looked better.
Right.
And people like didn't know what to do with themselves.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You've never had Jolie as the host, though, right?
She's never hosted, no.
Surprised.
You know who else was like personality as well was really awesome? Was Salma Hayek in person. Took a huge jump for me.
Just, she won you over with the total package.
Total package, super nice, you know, accent. I'm always pro accent. And it's funny, like there are things too, like when hosts just give themselves over to the show.
Yeah.
And they say like, you guys are the pros and we'll just, you know, we'll do whatever you want. Like that obviously for us is a way better week than somebody who comes with a ton of ideas. Like, it's one thing. Obviously, you love it when Baldwin or Timberlake or Hanks come with ideas because they know the score and how it works. But a lot of people, like, will come in, you know, and it's that funny thing of, like, my friends tell me I do this really funny accent. And I'm sure, by the way, it is a funny accent. But it's, like, it's been so used up in comedy.
Yeah.
That you're like, no, and that is, as a civilian, funny accent, that is funny. But,
well, from everything I've read about the show, and there are a couple great books about it, it seems like the two types of hosts that tick everybody off are the ones that try to push a whole bunch of their ideas onto the writers,
mm-hmm.
and then the ones that bring their own writers. Like, they don't trust your writing staff, so they feel like they have to bring four of their own people.
Yeah.
Those are the two villains.
That's accurate. But I will say, though, like, you know, like Ray Romano was a guy who brought some of his own writers, and they were great guys and wrote great pieces. Like, it's, you know, again, like, you can get people in who follow by the rules, and it's just great to have them around as well.
How awkward is it when you have the celebrity host who's pitching ideas that are terrible? Like, what's the process of talking them out of the idea without hurting their feelings?
Well, it's really hard. Like, you know, a lot of times what you do is, as to be gracious, you know, if they pitch an idea on Monday, you know, you try to write up a couple of their ideas.
Hmm.
And then hopefully, you know, if you do them at the table read, and you give it a best effort, you know, we don't tank pieces, but if you give it a best effort on Wednesday, you hope if it doesn't play, they will give up the fight as well.
So they'll understand by the lack of laughter that maybe this wasn't a good idea.
Although some, you know, of course, you know, and say like, yeah, that isn't actually how I would have written it up. Like, they blame the execution. But like last year, Hugh Laurie came in with an idea that I had the pleasure of writing with him, which was great. Like, you know, when comedy people come in and they have, like, the seed of a really good idea. Again, as you know from writing, the ideas are the currency. You know, like, you can ultimately execute on most things, but if somebody has a good idea, you couldn't be happier. Because, like, when you sit staring at a blank screen, usually it's not, how can I make this good idea work? It's usually, I need a good idea.
You must have had weeks where you're, like, 18 hours away from doing the dress rehearsal and you have four decent sketches and that's it, and you're wondering what the hell is going to fill the show.
Oh, absolutely. It's really rough when you, cause you know, we do have that, that Studio 60 board up on the wall.
Right.
And when you look at the cards, you keep like in your eyes trying to like figure out how this show is going to stretch out and fill this stuff. And usually, you know, the best, you know, cause my theory on the show always is the best SNL show has three things you love and one thing you hate. Cause again, it's by nature a little uneven.
Right.
It's the perfect show for TiVo, of course.
It's TiVo. It's in the top five for the shows that have been helped the most by TiVo.
Yeah.
There's no question. I actually like, because you guys do 3 weeks in a row and then you take a break.
Yes.
I always feel for some reason like the third week is the best of the three shows because you take the most chances in the third week. I don't know why that is.
I think it's the same. I think it's the same idea behind why staying up late is better for sketches. Like,
yeah,
you sort of have cleared out your safe moves.
Yeah.
And so all you're left with is like, yeah, the risk.
You guys are just running on basically fumes and caffeine.
Yeah, because last year we had a weird schedule. We did a lot of twos with a lot of breaks. And we, again, it's, you know, this is the start of our third week. Everybody's a little tired. But I agree with you, and I think it's also better for the audience because I remember as a kid, nothing bummed you out more than like 2 weeks in, it was a repeat of the first show.
Yeah, and it's funny because the show's free, but you're still furious.
Oh, yeah. No, it's amazing.
How dare you?
With TV.
Yeah. All right, I'm pitching an idea for this week's show.
All right, great. You know, do you know the host or does it not matter?
Who's the host?
Jon Bon Jovi.
Really?
I know.
Wow.
It'll be interesting. I'm he's going to be a nice, iconic guy. And it'll be like LeBron in a lot of ways, which is like you'll come up with a lot of ideas that you could only do with Jon Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Whereas like Seth Rogen, who we had last week, you could do anything.
Well, Jon Bon Jovi's also been in sketches before.
Well, yeah, exactly.
He did what was that sketch with the two guys who talked like each other? Like they auditioned?
What were they called?
I forget. Chris Parnell and the other guy.
Catan and Parnell.
Yeah, yeah, and they did, they were auditioning, and I think they were auditioning for Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora, who I'm fascinated by.
Yeah.
Hey, Richie Sambora is like in the top five of how the hell do you keep getting these hot women?
Yeah, it's
so
amazing.
So I love seeing him on TV, whatever he's doing. So that's the only reason I remember that sketch. All right, here's my idea.
Okay.
We've all seen these Dane Cook playoff commercials where he
right.
pretends to be such a big baseball fan, even though we're not sure he could pick Albert Pujols out of a police lineup.
Yeah.
First question, who could play Dane Cook on the cast?
Jason Sudeikis could absolutely play.
Okay. All right, the reason I think this could work is because he's such an easy guy to parody, even though he's been doing a good job of this himself lately.
Right.
For this sketch, he's shooting the baseball commercials that we're seeing constantly during the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But these are it's the actual shooting of those commercials. So he keeps screwing up the names. So when he's shooting the parts where he shouts out the names, he's saying, Marino Riviera, Johnny Damone, Jonathan Paperbon. And the director has to keep interrupting him, and then it just goes on for like 3 minutes.
That is absolutely an idea. That's a great sketch idea.
Thank you.
I love it. That's a perfect sketch idea.
We were joking about it yesterday when we were watching football. Every time he came on, we were just shouting out fake names. Albert Pujols! CC Sabathia!
Because we were saying when Manny hit that walk-off home run in Game 2, that as he walked off, there's a chance that there's four guys on the Red Sox he hasn't met yet. So, like, for him, it's the joy of having had a walk-off and also meeting new people.
The great thing about Manny is that he had to get intentionally walked like 15 times before he realized it was insulting.
Right.
And I think when they were walking Ortiz as the crowd was chanting Manny, I think he was like, hey, wait a second.
Right.
Wait, I should be taking this personally.
He probably also, like, he was like, why do they already know I'm going to get up? Oh, it's an intentional walk.
I have another SNL question.
All right. The DeMarco brothers, by the way.
The DeMarco brothers.
Yeah.
Did you have an assistant find that out, or did you just Google it?
I just Googled it.
Nice.
I felt bad that there was a character I couldn't remember on my own show. I pulled a Manny Ramirez.
SNL has been an institution over the years, but the thing that is amazing is how many times you guys have been counted out and
yes.
then you came back. And you guys had another resurgence last year thanks to a smaller cast, which I have a whole theory on, but also the digital shorts, I think, really gave you a little cachet on the internet.
Absolutely.
I think it was like the eighth resurgence in the last 33 years. Do you guys just completely tune out the critics at this point?
Yeah, you have to. Like, you realize with a show like this that ultimately its biggest, your biggest competition is with people's memory of the history of the show. So you're
right.
just competing against what people remember it as. And it's that weird thing, too, of like, this show now has been like people's show for so many. This is your parents' sketch comedy show.
Yeah.
You know, you don't write it that way, but like, you know, my parents still watch. And, so there's a lot of people that want it to be a lot of different things. And ultimately, you just have to look around and be like, okay, this is a really funny group of people. We just have to have faith in our ideas every week. And it was nice last year to sort of feel like, and again, I think you're right. I think smaller casts had so much to do with it. And again, like to have different elements. The other nice thing about digital shorts or even that stuff, like when we do the MacGruber things, is
yeah.
they buy, you know, because we have like just a limited amount of cameras on the show. So if you just do sketches, you have to go sketch commercial, and the acts stay really short.
Mm-hmm.
And now with like digital elements, it makes it so you can have more stuff before you go back to commercial, which has made the show, I think, a lot easier to watch.
The one thing I have noticed that's working against you is the way information is turned around and consumed now.
Yeah.
Like you take something like Britney loses her kids on a Monday or Tuesday, and then in the old days, you guys could do a sketch about that on Saturday. It'd be totally relevant.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, within 24 hours, it's been argued about. It's shown on all these stupid shows, and people are arguing about it on message boards, and by Wednesday, it's a dead story. How have you guys been able to deal with that?
I mean, I guess you try to, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, we don't – the one nice thing we can do is we don't comment on things as much as we dramatize things.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to be the first take on that. Like, even The Daily Show and Colbert Report, which have, like, an incredible ability to, like, comment on the news.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm huge fans of those shows. Like, at least we can play those characters.
Yeah.
And I think we're sort of – and, again, like, as a lover of sketch comedy – we're still, as far as sketches go, we're still getting the first sketch out, usually on a story.
Yeah.
And so you sort of have to, like, you know, and that's the one, again, that's the one move is we can dress somebody up like a person in the news and do it that way.
I always had this theory on Weekend Update. I always thought, remember, like, there was, like, that 5-year stretch when they couldn't figure out a show to put after Friends?
Yes.
I always thought they should have just moved Weekend Update there.
At
8:30 on Thursdays, and then just taking it out of SNL. And I know it's like a big part of the show, but I feel like that could be its own show.
That's an interesting point. Like I do think we can update, because the one thing that we can update is it could always be longer than
yeah.
it is, but it has to, you know, again, it is just one element of the show. Because I think that, I mean, I'm a big fan of Weekend Update features.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, people coming on. Like I find that, because that is that nice thing we have on our show, which is, you don't quite have enough for a sketch, but you'd love to comment on a story, and you'd love to have somebody play the people in the story. So features are great that way.
And it's a good way to get everybody involved.
Yeah, no, it's always been the way that you cover people who, you know, might not have a lot in the show that week.
Yeah, my theory about, which I've told you, but SNL, I feel like, is a basketball team. And right now you guys have a smaller cast, which I think is essential, but you have, like a basketball team works the best when you have, like, the main star. You've got a couple supporting stars, and then you have the rest of the cast who all fills in the different roles, and it goes about 9 or 10 deep. You don't want to go any bigger than that. But when you're trying in basketball and you're trying to play 11, 12 guys at once, it's always a disaster. And I feel like with SNL, it's the same thing because you want everybody to get involved, and if they're not as involved as some of the other guys, it seems like it hurts the show almost.
Yeah, it's really hard. Like when I remember – a few years ago, there's always a picture of, like, the original cast and a picture of the current cast.
Yeah.
And when the original cast is 7 and the current cast is 15, it's not that surprising that, like, people are less of stars.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much real estate on the show.
Right.
And I totally agree with you, because I think that you want people to know everybody. You want them to know their styles, and you want when they walk out in the sketch, you want people to be excited to be like, oh, this is a Fred Armisen scene, I like what he does, or this is a Will Forte scene, I like what he does. And I think that's happening more now just because there's more space. It wasn't like we lost untalented people. I think we lost some of the funniest people I've ever met, but it's just more room.
Do you think some people's talents are just geared toward like somebody like Fred Armisen, it seems like he was born to be on the show. Like he does that Gene Simmons last
yeah.
weekend, and it's just ridiculous. It's like, what would he have done if there wasn't an SNL? What would he have done with his career?
It's such a good question because he is so good at this. And the funny thing too is he's been trying to do Gene Simmons forever.
It was so random. I just loved it. I was delighted.
Yeah, it's funny. Like sometimes people just have these impressions. And like, you know, Hader does a really good James Mason.
Yeah.
Well, like, what's going to have to happen to get James Mason out there? And I felt the same about Fred's Gene Simmons. And he's
yeah.
tried writing, like, Gene Simmons pieces before, but then you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Why Gene Simmons? Why now? But the nice thing about the show is every now and then something will come up. You know, in this case, the National Douchebag Contest.
That was good.
And all of a sudden you're like, oh, Fred does Gene Simmons. So, but, yeah, no, there are people that are just built for sketch comedy.
Hader, I think Hader's Pacino is the single greatest impersonation on the show.
Absolutely.
I feel like you do a lot of recurring characters, sometimes too much, and that's one that I would want to see more.
Yeah,
I don't
that
know
is
what format.
we feel like we have something incredibly special there, so we're being very careful with it. But
that's a good idea.
It's a great impression.
It's really amazing, like, because it's probably, on a degree of difficulty, it's probably like a 9.9 out of 10.
Yeah.
Like doing his voice and getting all the mannerisms and stuff. Like, I don't even know how he does it.
He also impressively, to which I tip my cap to, has never once said hoo-ha as Pacino.
When that happens, you'll know it's over.
You'll know it's over. Yeah, it'll be like a sweaty dress rehearsal. And
well, speaking of over, Frank TV is coming.
Yes.
And you guys.
Now, how do you know that it's coming?
Well, apparently there was a commercial or something where he did a character. And,
okay.
A friend of mine was telling about it.
Right, yeah. I think I YouTubed that commercial because I know it's really hard to see.
You guys have had a lot of challengers. Have you ever been afraid of any of them?
Afraid is not like, I don't think the term. I will say that Frank is a really a pretty incredible impression.
Yeah, he is good. I will give it to him.
My brother used to be on Mad TV with him, and he's a great guy. So
yeah,
hope that'll work out. I think it's good. Like, at the end of the day, like, we still, I don't think anybody's ever tried to do exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we have that amazing, I mean, the fact that we get the different host every week, like, it's going to be hard for anybody to ever have that over
right.
us.
I still feel like HBO.
Yeah.
Because they could take the sketches in a more obscene direction and
Absolutely.
Throw in some nudity, and I feel like they could be the one real challenger.
That would, if you had to deal with somebody who could, like, swear, because again, like, even cable can be dirtier than us. Like, we do still,
yeah.
like, in sort of very old school ways, have censors every week.
Right.
I should email you some of the censor notes, because after we read like 40 sketches on Wednesday, they just print out, like, they give notes on all 40, not just the 12 we're doing.
Right.
And the way they just take out the words that is the problem, like, we have issue with this word, it's the funniest thing you've ever read.
What must have happened with blank in a box?
Well, it was.
I'm not allowed to say that word. Actually, they'll bleep it. I'm going to say it. F in a box.
There you go. Nice word. Well, that's what we did as well.
Yeah. But how hard was that to get on the air?
That wasn't that hard to get on the air. Like, once we, you know, once we bleeped it, I will say, like, our censors, as far as censors go, are fairly cool. And
yeah.
they understand it's a show that's on at 11:30 at night. And usually, you know, the first thing that has any issue is on after midnight. So they don't fight you too hard. I would say, to be honest, it's more about, it's less about language and more about who you might offend, be it, like, racial or religious.
Yeah.
Stuff like that tends to be the stuff that censors are more on.
Well, you guys also have a lot more leeway because it's been such a successful show. Because I remember when we started on Jimmy's show, and we had the censor, his name was Herb. And I'm not kidding, he was about 110 years old. And we would just be constantly fighting with him. And all he would, that is not fair use. Like, it would be a lot of those conversations.
Yeah.
And you just don't realize how hard it is to get stuff on TV sometimes.
Yeah, it really is.
Kind of been on the
It's amazing
side.
To have Lorne Michaels in your corner because
right.
he does carry a huge amount of clout at this network. And also he never raises his voice. So
yeah.
he's an incredibly effective negotiator that way.
I never knew until about 5 years ago that Mike Myers' Dr. Evil was apparently an impression of Lorne Michaels.
Yeah, it really – there's another one as well, which is the Kids in the Hall movie Brain Candy. Mark McKinney's doing Lauren as well.
Hmm.
It's there are definitely, you know, again, it's obviously a pretty exaggerated Lauren, but there are Laurenisms there.
When Studio 60 bombed, how happy were you guys?
It's funny. I'm a Sorkin fan. I was a big West Wing fan. I liked Sorkin. I liked that cast, but you are personally happy because you don't want your friends thinking that's what it's like.
Right.
Like that, so ultimately, like, you're like, I mean, I guess I'm sure people in politics thought the West Wing was crazy too.
Well, I felt that way about Sports Night.
Yeah.
Because people loved that show, and I was just like, that's not, because I knew people at ESPN at that point. I knew it just wasn't realistic to me. I couldn't take it.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe the thing about West Wing is that really nobody knows what the White House is like. So
right. I also think, as well, like, maybe the difference is, like, people in politics might just have been happy that there was a show that made politics look sexier than it was.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when you're in show business, you don't really love show business commenting on it.
Mm.
Also, it's really hard to do a drama about a comedy show.
Well, especially, I think his big mistake was just not hiring sketch writers to write the actual sketches.
Yeah.
because it was really tough to buy that Matthew Perry and the other guy were saving the show and the sketches were bad.
Yeah.
This guy, oh, that's great. Oh, the ratings have turned around. And meanwhile, these sketches are just terrible. I always thought that was like the big problem with it. Hey, I hate to get serious on you, but your first SNL show happened right after 9/11, right?
Yeah, it definitely did.
Yeah, because you guys, what was that, 2.5 weeks afterwards?
Yeah, September 29th.
Nobody was really ready to laugh yet.
No.
You had to do the show.
Yes.
And Paul Simon comes out and he sings The Boxer. And you have Rudy Giuliani's there, and he's surrounded by the New York City policemen and the firemen. And it was such a moving 4 minutes. I just don't feel like there's ever been a moment like that in the history of television. I still have it on my TiVo, actually.
Wow.
What was that like, and how hard was that to do the show that week?
Well, there's a couple things, which is, first of all, that was already going to be the craziest night of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, in the craziest week. So, like, on a personal level, I was already going crazy because I was going to be on this show.
Right.
And I had moved to New York for this job, like, August 20th. So, like, I'd moved. 9/11 happened 3 weeks later. It was all this craziness. So I'd never done a show before 9/11. So, mm-hmm. It was already, like, super hard for me. But that was, like, I was so happy to have been in New York for all of it to begin with. Because mostly when you were here, you realized how quickly the city sort of bounced back.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, okay, it's going to be okay. Whereas if I was still in Chicago watching on CNN, I think I would have been like, oh, God, it's, you know, the Martians land.
Yeah.
But the most amazing thing about that night was I was only in one thing where I was a singing fish head.
Yeah.
So I had to wear a green leotard it was green screen, so my head would be floating. So I was in a green leotard with, like, my face painted green, standing next to, like, two New York cops. And it was like, I was thinking, like, I really wish I looked just half less ridiculous than I do right now.
Ugh.
For this incredibly moving moment. But it was amazing. It was an amazing night. I had such respect for Lauren on that whole night as well.
Well, and it was also one of those nights that, you know, SNL is really one of the things that jumps to your mind when you think of New York City. And it was really important that show, there was something memorable about it, I think. And,
yeah.
And that just turned out to be the moment. But the weird thing about the actual show, because they'll show it on E! Sometimes, is like the sketches were all very safe sketches. Like,
yeah.
Nobody kind of knew where the comedy lines were yet. You were just kind of feeling it out. So it was all like, I think Will Ferrell had like the American flag pants on,
yeah,
underpants, and nobody kind of knew what to do. And then
it was weird because, it was really hard to comment on it. In a way that, like, the other thing is, like, The Onion had such a great post 9/11 issue.
Yep.
I remember thinking, like, to this day, like, it's the best comedy done on it. But yep. The weird thing about, like, when you perform live, like, you are a person, a cast member who says things, and the audience associates it with you. It's different than reading it.
Well, and then it starts out with such an emotional 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, here's some sketches.
Yeah.
It was just that was definitely the most unique show in the history of the thing. I have one last question because you've had a bunch of athletes hosting.
Yeah.
Over, I think Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and LeBron just in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
How hard is it to write for these guys?
It's not hard in that you come up with ideas easier. You know, when you have like LeBron James, you're like, oh, here's, you know, we have this, he's certainly the only 6'10" black guy we've had since I've been on the show. So all those sketch ideas for those, you're like, this is the now's the time to use them. And he's a basketball player, and we haven't had any of those since I was there. So ideas come up pretty easily. You just have less of a sense of what they can do as far as performance. But the thing that's nice about athletes is they have ice water in their veins. Like, this is like the 100th hardest thing they've ever done. And so there's a confidence with them that's really nice. And, you know, some are obviously better than others. You know, you actually mentioned it about the ESPYs. The hardest thing is, of course, when you meet guys that you have always despised.
Yep.
And they're super nice guys. I mean, Jeter was a prince.
Ugh.
Yeah, just absolute, like, I mean, kneeling down to sign autographs for kids, like, you know, like going out of his way to be nice, like, so. And I just remember being like, oh, right, this is every athlete you're going to meet is going to, they're going
to
be nice.
Yeah, it kills me to admit this, but I think Manning was better than Brady.
Yeah, they were both really good, but, Manning was really good.
Manning was like, I think the reason I feel like he was better was because it was so surprising that he was decent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but he was a super nice guy, too. He told great stories. He was fun to hang out with. Yeah.
Do you know the first basketball player to host the show was?
Bill Russell.
Yes.
Yes.
And he had this, I think it might have been one of the top 10 greatest TV moments of my life, because The White Shadow was my favorite show back then, and I think SNL was number two. And they had a sketch where Bill Russell was the Black Shadow. He was coaching this all-white team, and he was, every time somebody disagreed with him, he would say, is it because I'm black? Like, it went on way too long, but it was just really exciting. That,
yeah, no, I can imagine it for you. Now, yeah. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Johnny, are you worried yet? Which I adore. Now, have you made the call today?
Do I make it today, or do I wait until tomorrow?
Okay, I mean, I guess I'm more curious as to how worried he is now. But here's my main question is, is he Jacko or Johnny? Because that is always the most confusing introduction to me.
Yeah, you're right. Well, it's kind of like P. Diddy and Puff Daddy. Like,
understood. Got
he
it.
He was originally Jacko, but I thought it would sound funnier if I said, are you worried, Johnny, are you worried yet, instead of Jacko, are you worried yet?
So no, it sounds way better. I just always like, Johnny, are you worried about where I call my friend Jacko?
That's true. I might have to fix that.
But I'm very excited to hear how worried he is. I have endured that all season. And much like there was a time where I was going to skip past the part where you asked him, because the Yankees are doing so well, and it was the week that you hadn't even called him.
Yeah, you know, I didn't call him for like 2 weeks, and all these people were emailing me saying that I was wussing out and that I had to be a man.
Yeah.
And they were right. You know, you can't just call him on bad weeks. But now you've inspired me. We're going to call him right now.
I will say, as a Yankee fan, he's incredibly tolerable. He seems to be a very nice guy.
Well, it depends if he's been drinking or not.
Yeah.
After like two beers, it definitely changes a little bit.
And what was were you on Tropicana? When I had the original Boston Sports Guy stuff, was it Tropicana listserv? What was that called?
The which one?
Where was your original Boston Sports Guy stuff that I would get like emailed to me? Like,
it was a Digital City Boston, which was basically became almost like a visitor's guide. Initially, it started out as a digital newspaper for like 4 months, and then everybody got fired except me. And then I was just on this site that I had nobody else was on it. It was weird.
Well, Derek Lowface, I remember when I first read that, I knew you were here to stay.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
No worries.
Seth Meyers, good luck this week writing jokes for Jamba Joe.
Thank you very much, man.
Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
All right, go Sox.
Go Red Sox. All right.
Bye.
All right, we're going to call my buddy Johnny, a.k.a. Jacko. Yankees down 2-1. Joe Torre's job threatened. George Steinbrenner wakes up. And now we'll see how weird it is.
Hello?
Johnny.
Hey.
Are you worried yet?
yes, I am a little worried, yes. Quite worried.
What were you yesterday on a scale of 1 to 10?
27.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah.
What about today?
I feel good about today. I think they're going to beat Paul Byrd, and I think Wong will pitch better. I don't think it's a big deal for him on 3 days rest, because as a sinker ball pitcher, the more tired his arm is, the better he probably is. Hmm. Game five, if there should be a game five, would worry me with Sabathia.
I would hope so.
And Carmona in reserve and Indians at home. It's a tough hill to climb. There's no question.
What kind of obscenities were you yelling at the TV when the fat trader asked out of the game in the third inning because of his alleged pulled hamstring?
Oh, I was yelling some. Don't worry about that. But, I mean, I think he legitimately has a pulled hamstring, but the guy's 58. I mean, what did they expect? I expected nothing out of him.
That's a good point.
His hamstring doesn't hurt him when he's on his way to signing the checks, but I was actually watching it with some friends, and they said, what are you killing Clements for? If somebody was paying you $28 million for something you could no longer do, wouldn't you take it? I said, yeah, I absolutely would. It's a good point. It's the Yankees' fault. I mean, I understand he's done. He's shot. They should have known that and not paid him a ridiculous amount of money. I wasn't expecting anything out of him.
This is great. You sound like an emotional wreck.
Yeah, Friday's game hurt. I mean, the fact that they can't hit, and A-Rod, who a couple weeks ago I was signing the $500 million contracts, I mean, he could go to the Cubs and go to Anaheim tonight as far as I'm concerned. He's so pathetic. I wish they could hypnotize him and tell him it's April 13th and they're playing the Kansas City Royals. He'd probably have 3 home runs.
Did he have a hit yesterday?
Yeah, I had 2 big singles. It was huge, big difference maker.
Oh, this is great. I'm so happy. I feel like I need to like put my headphones down and take a walk. so delighted by the panic in your voice. Meanwhile, I hope you've been following the Boston Red Sox.
Well, yeah, I have. Yeah, congratulations. They're going to win the World Series. It's great. It's good.
Were you surprised that we were able to beat a team that had a cleanup hitter who could only see out of one eye?
Yeah, it's great. And I'm sure Major League Baseball can't wait for that Colorado-Boston World Series. It's four-game sweep. Congratulations.
Yeah, what are they going to do? I mean, it has to be Colorado or Arizona now.
Yeah, that's what it is in the National League. NLCS. Yeah.
I feel like they're still going to sub Philly or New York or the Cubs, just like in the interest of ratings. Like, we're sorry, we apologize to the fans of the Diamondbacks, but we'll be subbing in the Mets for the World Series.
Well, before last night's game, I said that was the one thing I thought I had going for me as a Yankee fan, is that Bud Selig has to be like, we need Yankees-Red Sox because we're going to get no ratings in the National League.
Yeah, it's
true.
So
I think he had a meeting with the umpires beforehand and was like, anything close, the Yanks get the benefit of the doubt.
Well, the other factor with that was that if the Indians had finished off the Yanks last night, they wouldn't have had games for like 4 days.
Right.
What would they have done?
Exactly.
TBS would have had to launch Frank TV early.
Boy, that looks like a winner.
Come on. It's a killer Robert Williams. No, yeah. He's good. My only thing with Frank is that I think he needs to do some impersonations of guys who are under 50 years old. Because all of his stuff is great. Like, De Niro's great. Robin Williams is great. Bush is great. Madden is great. But I think he needs to work in, like, Spencer from the Hills. Like, at least one of those. At least his show's supposed to be appealing to a demographic that's,
yeah,
I'm assuming, is 18 to 35. You got to at least mix in, like, Kevin Federline or somebody, right?
You would hope, yeah. You would hope. And is the whole show just him, like, doing impersonations, like...
We don't know. They've been very...
Jack Nicholson, like, walks into a bar or something and comedy ensues. Like, what's the show about?
I think he's got to work on a Roger Clemens impersonation where Roger pulls his hammy in a must-win game and limps off the field and has to get replaced by 22-year-old Phil Hughes. What do you think of that skit?
Phil Hughes was great last night.
He was good.
I would enjoy that skit, actually. So.
Well... We're going to be calling you again later in the week, hopefully for the final edition of Johnny, Are You Worried Yet? But what are you today on a scale of 1 to 10?
For today's game or just overall nervousness?
I'm going to say overall nervousness.
7.5.
7.5?
Yeah.
You have 2 must-win games in a row and you're 7.5?
Yeah. Why, you think I should be higher?
Yes.
I should be like a 9?
I don't think you have any chance against Sabathia in Game 5, unless Joe Borowski is involved somehow.
I'm going to tell you something. Andy Pettit's going to pitch the game of his life. CC Sabathia is going to choke in a big situation with his crooked hat. They better get the bugs out again, because the Yanks, you can't let a champion up off the mat, Bill.
Well,
they let the Yanks up off the mat last night, and as we learned in 2004, when a team gets a little momentum and starts to believe in itself.
Yeah. Well,
don't
the thing about
that, this could be the gritty gutty Yankees, and you want no part of them. You better hope Cleveland wins.
Oh, I want every part of them. The funny thing about the bugs is that the Yankees fans will have you believe that they only attack Jabba Chamberlain.
Yeah,
but in fact, they attack Carmona as well, but somehow Jabba Chamberlain gets like the pass.
Yeah, John Sterling, the Yankees broadcaster, was doing it, and Susan Waldman, who I can't even talk about rationally.
Yeah.
We're talking about the bugs, and it's nonsensical to blame that on the bugs. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
Both teams were out there in the bugs. That's a joke. I would never make an excuse and say, well, if not for the bugs. Of course, if this happened in Boston, I think that we would be hearing that repeatedly about the
bugs. Yeah, whatever. Hey, one last thing.
Yes.
If you get a chance to talk to Joe Torre today when you call him before the game like you always do.
Exactly.
Please thank him on behalf of Red Sox fans everywhere for pitching Jabba Chamberlain in 2 innings last night in a meaningless 8-3 game.
In an 8-3 game, it's true.
That was brilliant. That was one of his finest moments, I thought. Did he think that was a must-win game?
Was that a must-win game last night?
No, did Torre think it was a must-win game to pitch Jabba twice?
Well, it was a must-win game.
Yeah, but they're up 8-3. Like, why not save him for game 4?
Well, that's a good point. He shouldn't have pitched them in the 8th inning. I completely agree. They could have brought it. I mean, with an 8-3 lead, you can bring in Vizcaino or Farnsworth or somebody.
That was bad managing.
Ohlendorf. Yeah, no, I agree. And then Jabba struggled in the 8th inning, too. Ended up throwing 35 pitches total.
But now you can't use him today.
Oh, they might use him tonight. But you can do the reverse. You could pitch him for an inning and pitch Mariano for 2 if necessary. They have a day off tomorrow.
I think you're crazy. I think they will not pitch Jabba tonight. They have not pitched him back-to-back really at all. And if they do pitch him, he's going to stink. So you're screwed either way. Johnny, I wish you the worst of luck tonight.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you later in the week.
All righty.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.